At some time or other, all of us have heard someone say, "That's just who I am. I can't or won't change." But can we remain the same all through our lives? The answer has to be no. We can never remain the same. However much we say we don't like change, during our lives we have all had to change, often by circumstances thrust upon us, while others we have chosen to make. For instance, when we were growing up, we changed schools at least once. Many of us had no TV, computers or mobile phones. I know that seems strange to the younger people in our congregation, but that was the way it was. They've all changed our lives in a very profound way. On a more personal level, we recognise that significant changes come in the face of bereavement, serious health problems, caring for someone with a disability, the loss of a job, a loved one, a friendship, or things like the pandemic, which changed all our lives. People who experience floods, fire, drought, earthquakes, and other natural disasters have to face life-altering ways of living. Some come through better than others. We can't just wish that things would return to the way they were, because unfortunately life doesn't work like that. But we need to see how God can change how we approach these adversities, giving us that extra dimension of being able to cope and change the way we live. That can be transforming. Sometimes it may be that just one person might reach out to us and say something which gives us a new perspective and on our abilities and new possibilities. I grew up thinking I was not good at anything, that all the brains of the family were given to the firstborn, my brother. But in my early 20s, I had to give a report in church for some event that the youth group had been involved in. After that service, I received a very warm letter from the minister, which gave me a strong sense that perhaps I might be good at something, although it took me many years to take any action. But let us look at the people Jesus chose as his disciples. What a mixed bunch they were. Why did he choose those particular men? Surely they could not change from the people they were. How could a tax collector start to understand how the job he'd been doing affected people in their everyday lives? How could a fisherman become a preacher and a healer? But Jesus could see their potential. He was very patient with them, and even when they let him down, supported them and showed he believed in them and would always love them. Let's look at Peter in particular. Our two readings have been very contrasting ones about Peter. In one way, he was less likely a leader than one could imagine. He was outspoken and upfront about everything he did, but was quite undisciplined. When we see how he started out and the person he eventually became, he was hardly recognisable. As we read through the Gospels, we see him as impulsive, ambitious, self-assertive, impetuous, and quick to commit without fully understanding the meaning of Jesus' words or actions. In fact, I guess we could say he was a bit of a loudmouth, lacking humility, and not terribly reliable. It was amazing to see the way he changed as he committed himself to following Jesus. He changed from being a bit of a loose cannon to becoming a rock upon which Jesus could build his church. How could this happen? Well, we know that Christ can transform people into what he would have us be, but we need to be committed to doing the hard work to get there. It doesn't just happen. Jesus recognised that all these chosen men could change. They were still very young, with all the characteristics of youth. Some of those characteristics which we might see as negative could be turned into powerful tools for future ministry. Peter's enthusiasm was engaging, and he was capable of strong emotions, with the potential for leadership. But most of all, he was devoted to Jesus. Although even when he later became a leader, he often spoke before he thought things through. He probably took on this role because of all the disciples he was the most assertive and outspoken, and not afraid to ask questions when he didn't understand what Jesus was saying to them. He always sought clarification. Most of the time he was loyal, trying to do his best in spreading the message Jesus was preaching. But of course we know he let Jesus down on a few occasions. But apart from those, he was always there, supporting Jesus and showing his loyalty. He had so much to learn along the way. The stories of his mistakes often are at the forefront, the most prominent one being the one where he denied Jesus 3 times when people asked him if he was a follower. No, I didn't know him. At Pentecost, Peter came into his own. He focused on the task ahead and became a strong leader, healer, and preacher, willing to give his life for his faith. In fact, he became one of the greatest leaders of the early church. What a transformation from that loud-mouthed, undisciplined fisherman. Our transformation might not be as dramatic as Peter's, but we know how life-changing the love of Jesus can be in our lives. We find ourselves able to cope in ways we could not possibly have done in our own strength. As with that minister's letter to me, it seems sometimes takes another person or participation in a group to help us recognise this. There have been many personality tests over the years to assess what kind of people we are and what skills we may have. One in particular was the Myers-Briggs test, which was used extensively in the 1980s, in which some of us participated, which our then minister, Bruce Turley, who was a trained psychologist. The goal was to allow respondents to further explore and understand their own personalities, including their likes, dislikes, strengths, weaknesses, possible career preferences, and compatibility with other people. Originally, I think it was designed to assist businesses to fit the right person to the right job, taking into account their personality type and so on. But it became a very useful tool for discovering where our strengths and weaknesses lay, and encouraged us to address the weaknesses to help us understand ourselves more clearly and develop a better understanding, become better rounded individuals. And it was also designed to help us understand the people we were working with. The premise was to answer questions from several categories, then put them together to show what personality type we were. Afterwards, we were left to ponder our better understanding of other people and recognise more about ourselves. Unfortunately, it was misused by some. I was involved with catering for a 90th birthday party some years ago, and one particular person annoyed me quite a lot because she had just done the Myers-Briggs test too, and she said, well, she wasn't helping in the kitchen because that wasn't her personality type. And I don't think that was part of mine either. But I know there are some things we all have to do when they need to be done, even if we don't particularly like doing them or feel suited to them. If we think back on the kind of people we were back then, hopefully we have become better balanced. Some of us have discovered skills we would never have thought that we had. I, for one, would not have imagined that I'd be standing here this morning leading this service, or in the past speaking at community groups for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, or becoming a civil celebrant. Also, we may have seen possibilities in other people that they may not have recognised in themselves. We never know until we try. Sometimes it's others who can see our possibilities and encourage us to follow a new path. That can be transforming. Of course, there are people who would find it difficult to even start thinking about change or recognising it, let alone being able to understand what the Myers-Briggs test was getting at. They may have suffered such trauma growing up that their main focus in life was just surviving day to day. Recently, I read a book by James R. Doty, MD, called Into the Magic Shop, about a neurosurgeon's quest to discover the mysteries of the brain and the secrets of the heart. When the book was published in 2016, he was a professor of neurosurgery at Stanford University and the director of the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education. He was also serving on a number of non-profit organizations, including the Charter for Compassion International and the Dalai Lama Foundation. When I started reading his story, I couldn't believe that this person would ever achieve the role of surgeon. Jim's story started with him as a 12-year-old from a very poor, dysfunctional family. His father was an alcoholic who couldn't hold down a job, so there was the constant worry of being evicted from their rented home, as well as what kind of mood his father would be in when he came home. And he regularly came home drunk. That was really regular. His mother suffered from severe depression, so spent most of her time in bed, except when she was rushed to hospital after having taken an overdose. His older brother was the butt of bullies, so he was always on the lookout for him, seeking to protect him when he was attacked. His whole life was embedded with stress, looking out for his vulnerable family. But he was interested in magic tricks and had a small collection of treasures, one of which was a false thumb. One day he couldn't find this thumb and he hunted everywhere for it. Then he gave up and walked down the street. In the local shopping strip was a magic shop full of interesting items. Of course, he had no money to buy a new thumb, but he went in anyway. Behind the counter was an older woman who asked him what she could do for him. He told her about the lost thumb, but she said she was just minding the shop for her son, who would be back shortly. She started chatting to him and he warmed to her. No one had ever shown an interest in him before. This was the start of a warm, enriching friendship. The woman asked him about himself and realised how stressed he was. She told him her name was Ruth and that she would be there for only 6 weeks, but if he really wanted to learn, she would teach him some magic tricks which he would need to practice every day to make them work. Actually, what Ruth would teach him was mindfulness, with relaxation and meditation exercises to help him switch off from these negative and stressful feelings and calm his breathing. She encouraged him to open his heart and his mind. These visits became daily. A few weeks later, Ruth asked him to look inside his heart and list his goals for the future. Number one was, don't get evicted. The next one was, go on a date with Chris, a girl he admired from school. And as the list went down, go to college, be a doctor, own $1 million, a Rolex watch, a Porsche, a mansion, an island, and success. When Ruth read his list, she said, What, he asked. Did you open your heart before you made this list, like I asked you to? Yes. He lied. The first time he had not been truthful with Ruth. He wasn't sure how to open his heart. Ruth then said, I didn't know you wanted to be a doctor. This had come about because of a job day at school, when several visitors told the children about their jobs. There was a doctor amongst them who inspired Jim with the way he spoke of his job of being a calling and how it enriched him to help people. He had seen the way Jim responded to his presentation and spoke to him afterwards, telling him he could possibly be a doctor himself. Here was a second person who'd shown an interest in him, opening up possibilities for the future. A new way of facing life and opening the door to understanding. Jim's stories continued into his adult life, taking us through the steps of his achieving all of the things on his list of goals. Through some amazing and unexpected circumstances, he did achieve all his goals, but everything came unstuck for a while. The time came when he realised that things had gone wrong because he had stopped practicing Ruth's so-called magic every day. He'd been too busy being successful and earning so much money. He had said he didn't believe in a powerful supreme being who decided who is worthy and who is not and grants wishes and gifts accordingly. He wrote, "I've seen too many times the arbitrariness of a world in which an incredibly kind and wonderful person meets a sudden and painful death. And I've also seen people who are fundamentally unkind and evil, even evil, flourish." Well, I don't believe in that kind of being either. We all know that humankind was given a free will in which to live for good or evil. God is there to accompany us on our often painful journeys, giving us the strength, wisdom, and courage to see us through those difficult times. When Jim started to do more research into psychology and neurosurgery, he realised he needed to become more attuned to his patients. He had left medicine for some time, but returned with a new attitude, listening carefully to the stories and concerns of each of his patients, while using his immense technical skill in operating on them. He decided to make another list of 10 things, which focused on the heart. He saw them as a mnemonic, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. Compassion, dignity, equanimity, forgiveness, gratitude, humility, integrity, justice, kindness, and love. What he called the alphabet of the heart. Belatedly, he remembered that he had promised Ruth that someday he would teach his magic to others. He started to see that everyone has problems and that basically we are all the same, all coping with something. But Jim was still carrying in his mind and heart the small boy from the dysfunctional family which had defined his life. He had to let go of that story. He wrote, "I had made an identity out of my poverty. And as long as I carried that identity with me, no matter how much wealth I accumulated, I would always be living in poverty. In my daily practice, I opened my heart to my mother and father, and I found forgiveness for them. I opened my heart to the boy I used to be and found compassion for him. I opened my heart to all the mistakes I had made and all the ways I had foolishly tried to prove my worth in the world, and found humility. And in doing so, I knew I wasn't the only person in the world to have been hungry. I wasn't the only person in the world to have ever been frightened. I wasn't the only person in the world to have known loneliness or felt isolated and different. I opened up my heart and found that my heart had the ability to connect with every other heart it met. It was exhausting and beautiful and strange, all at the same time." Years later, as his fame spread, Jim was asked to speak at the graduation ceremony of his old college. He shared with his audience of 1,200 students his story of the doctor who'd inspired him in the fourth grade, and of Ruth, the woman who believed in him. He told his audience that each of them had the power to change their lives and the lives of others for the better, not only the lives of his patients, but also the lives of all around them. Sometimes it took only a smile or a word. He told them of his alphabet of the heart, and that one act of compassion can lead to another, and so on across the globe. He went on through each letter, and he said, "There is no perfect life we are born into, and there was no escaping the reality of suffering. There is also no escaping the beautiful synchronicity of the heart." He continued by telling them that they would experience some of the darkest valleys through their work, but it would also take them to life's highest peaks when they would see the meek demonstrate strength you thought not possible, cures for which you could find no explanation, and the power of compassion and kindness to cure human ills. And at the conclusion, he said these very unexpected words, "And by doing so, you will see the face of God." His speech had inspired the whole audience as well as his colleagues on the stage. They were all weeping as they gave him a standing ovation. Afterwards, he said, "They were not applauding me, just me or my journey, but our collective journey towards greater compassion and ever greater humanity." And isn't Jim Doty's message for each one of us? We do have the possibility of making a difference, but it may mean we have to change some things about ourselves. Jesus transformed the lives of his disciples by showing them a new way of living, embracing loyalty, love, compassion, and understanding. He helped them develop skills they had never recognized in themselves. So for each of us, it may be that we need to develop a closer relationship with God. We all know the transforming power of believing that we have God walking this strange, difficult and exciting life's journey with us, enabling us to become the people he would have us be. Who knows what changes may occur in us as we, as individuals and this fellowship, if we open ourselves to being transformed in his power, knowing that what we were doesn't define us, it is who we have become. Amen.